Chapter 160. What was caught in the traps that were set, how Bradley Headstone had been racked and driven in his mind since the quiet evening when by the riverside he had risen, as it were, out of the ashes of the barchman, nobody could have told. Not even he could have told, for such misery can only be felt. First, he had to bear the combined weight of the knowledge of what he had done, of that haunting reproach, that he might have done it so much better, and of the dread of discovery. This was load enough to crush him, and he labored under it day and night. It was as heavy on him in his scanty sleep, as in his red-eyed waking hours. It bore him down with a dread unchanging monotony, in which there was not a moment's variety. The overweighted beast of burden, or the overweighted slave, can for certain instants shift the physical load, and find some slight respite even in enforcing additional pain upon such a set of muscles or such a limb. Not even that poor mockery of relief could the wretched man obtain, under the steady pressure of the infernal atmosphere into which he had entered. Time went by, and no visible suspicion dogged him. Time went by, and in such public accounts of the attack as were renewed at intervals, he began to see Mr. Lightwood, who acted as lawyer for the injured man, straying further from the fact, going wider of the issue, and evidently slackening in his zeal. By degrees, a glimmering of the cause of this began to break on Bradley's sight. Then came the chance meeting with Mr. Milvey at the railway station, where he often lingered in his leisure hours, as a place where any fresh news of his deed would be circulated, or any placard referring to it would be posted, and then he saw in the light what he had brought about. For, then he saw that through his desperate attempt to separate those two forever, he had been made the means of uniting them. That he had dipped his hands in blood, to mark himself a miserable fool and tool. That Eugene Rayburn, for his wife's sake, set him aside, and left him to crawl along his blasted course. He thought of fate, or providence, or be the directing power what it might, as having put a fraud upon him overreached him, and in his impotent mad rage bit, and tore, and had his fit. New assurance of the truth came upon him in the next few following days, when it was put forth, how the wounded man had been married on his bed, and to whom, and how, though all was in a dangerous condition, he was a shade better. Bradley would far rather have been seized for his murder than he would have read that passage, knowing himself spared, and knowing why. But, not to be still further defrauded and overreached, which he would be, if implicated by Riderhood, and punished by the law for his abject failure, as though it had been a success he kept close in his school during the day, ventured out warily at night, and went no more to the railway station. He examined the advertisements in the newspapers for any sign that Riderhood acted on his hinted threat of, so summoning him to renew their acquaintance, but found none. Having paid him handsomely for the support and accommodation he had had at the lockhouse, and knowing him to be a very ignorant man who could not write, he began to doubt whether he was to be feared at all, or whether they need ever meet again. All this time, his mind was never off the rack, and his raging sense of having been made to fling himself across the chasm which divided those two, and bridge it over for their coming together, never cooled down. This horrible condition brought on other fits. He could not have said how many, or when, but he saw in the faces of his pupils that they had seen him in that state, and that they were possessed by a dread of his relapsing. One winter day when a slight fall of snow was feathering the sills and frames of the schoolroom windows, he stood at his blackboard, crayon in hand, about to commence with a class, when, reading in the countenances of those boys that there was something wrong, and that they seemed in alarm for him, he turned his eyes to the door towards which they faced. He then saw a slouching man of forbidding appearance standing in the midst of the school, with a bundle under his arm, and saw that it was Riderhood. He sat down on a stool which one of his boys put for him, and he had a passing knowledge that he was in danger of falling, and that his face was becoming distorted. But the fit went off for that time, and he wiped his mouth, and stood up again. Beg your pardon, Governor. By your leave. Apostrophe said Rider Hood, knuckling his forehead, with a chuckle and a leer. What place may this be? Apostrophe, apostrophe, this is a school. Apostrophe, where young folks learns what's right. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, gravely nodding. Beg your pardon, Governor. By your leave. But who teaches this school? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I do. Apostrophe, you're the master, are you, learned Governor? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. I am the master. Apostrophe, and a lovely thing it must be, apostrophe, said Rider Hood. Fur to learn young folks what's right, and fur to know what they know what you do it. Beg your pardon, learned Governor. By your leave. That there blackboard. What's it for? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is for drawing on, or writing on. Apostrophe, is it though? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Rider Hood. Who'd have thought it, from the looks on it? Would you be so kind as write your name upon it, learned Governor? Apostrophe, apostrophe, in a wheedling tone. Bradley hesitated for a moment, but placed his usual signature, enlarged, upon the board. I ain't a learned character myself, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, surveying the class, but I do admire learning in others. I should dearly like to hear these here young folks read that their name off, from the writing. Apostrophe, the arms of the class went up. At the miserable master's nod, the shrill chorus arose. Bradley Headstone. Apostrophe, apostrophe, no? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Rider Hood. You don't mean it? Headstone. Why, that's in a churchyard. Hoor for another turn. Apostrophe, another tossing of arms, another nod, and another shrill chorus. Bradley Headstone. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I've got it now. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, after attentively listening, and internally repeating. Bradley. I see. Christen name, Bradley similar to Roger which is my own. Eh? Family name, Headstone, similar to Rider Hood which is my own. Eh? Apostrophe, shrill chorus. Yes. Apostrophe, might you be acquainted, learned Governor, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, with a person of about your own eighth and breadth, and what I'd pull down in a scale about your own weight, answering to a name sounding somewhat like Totherist? Apostrophe, apostrophe, with a desperation in him that made him perfectly quiet, though his jaw was heavily squared, with his eyes upon Rider Hood, and with traces of quickened breathing in his nostrils, the schoolmaster replied, in a suppressed voice, after a pause. I think I know the man you mean. Apostrophe, I thought you knowed the man I mean, learned Governor. I want the man. Apostrophe, with a half glance around him at his pupils, Bradley returned. Do you suppose he is here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, begging your pardon, learned Governor, and by your leave, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, with a laugh. How could I suppose he's here, when there's nobody here but you, and me, and these young lambs what you're a-learning on? But he is most excellent company, that man, and I want him to come and see me at my lock, up the river. Apostrophe, I'll tell him so. Apostrophe, do you think he'll come? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Rider Hood. I am sure he will. Apostrophe, having got your word for him, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, I shall count upon him. Perhaps you'd so fur oblige me, learned Governor, as tell him that, if he don't come precious soon, I'll look him up. Apostrophe, he shall know it. Apostrophe, thank ye. As I says a while ago, apostrophe, pursued Rider Hood, changing his horse tone and leering round upon the class again, though not a learned character my own self, I do admire learning in others, to be sure. Being here and having met with your kind attention, master, might I, afore I go, ask a question of these here young lambs of yourn? Apostrophe, apostrophe, if it is in the way of school, apostrophe, said Bradley, always sustaining his dark look at the other, and speaking in his suppressed voice, you may. Apostrophe, oh, it's in the way of school, apostrophe, cried Rider Hood. I'll pound it, master, to be in the way of school. What's the divisions of water, my lambs? What sorts of water is there on the land? Apostrophe, shrill chorus. Seas, rivers, lakes, and ponds. Apostrophe, seas, rivers, lakes, and ponds. Apostrophe, said Rider Hood. They've got all the lot, master. Blowed if I shouldn't have left out lakes, never having clapped eyes upon one, to my knowledge. Seas, rivers, lakes, and ponds. What is it, lambs, as they catches in seas, rivers, lakes, and ponds? Apostrophe, apostrophe, shrill chorus, with some contempt for the ease of the question, colon, fish. Apostrophe, apostrophe, good a gin. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Rider Hood. But what else is it, my lambs, as they sometimes catches in rivers? Apostrophe, apostrophe, chorus at a loss. One shrill voice. Weed. Apostrophe, good a gin. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Rider Hood. But it ain't weed neither. You'll never guess, my dears. What is it, besides fish, as they sometimes catches in rivers? Well, I'll tell you. It's suits o' clothes. Apostrophe, Bradley's face changed. Leastways, lambs, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, observing him out of the corners of his eyes. That's what I my own self sometimes catches in rivers. For strike me blind, my lambs, if I didn't catch in a river the worry bundle under my arm. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the class looked at the master, as if appealing from the irregular entrapment of this mode of examination. The master looked at the examiner, as if he would have torn him to pieces. I ask your pardon, learned governor, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, smearing his sleeve across his mouth as he laughed with a relish. Tain't fair to the lambs, I know. It was a bit of fun of mine. But upon my soul I drawed this here bundle out of a river. It's a barchman's suit of clothes. You see, it had been sunk there by the man as wore it, and I got it up. Apostrophe, how do you know it was sunk by the man who wore it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Bradley. Cause I see him do it, apostrophe, said Rider Hood. They looked at each other. Bradley, slowly withdrawing his eyes, turned his face to the blackboard, and slowly wiped his name out. A heap of thanks, master, apostrophe, said Rider Hood, for bestowing so much of your time, and of the lamps's time, upon a man as hasn't got no other recommendation to you, than being a honest man. Wishing to see at my lock up the river, the person as we've spoke of, and as you've answered for, I takes my leave of the lambs, and of their learned governor both. Apostrophe, with those words, he slouched out of the school, leaving the master to get through his weary work as he might, and leaving the whispering pupils to observe the master's face until he fell into the fit which had been long impending. The next day, but one, was Saturday, and a holiday. Bradley rose early, and set out on foot for Plashwater Weir Mill Lock. He rose so early, that it was not yet light, when he began his journey. Before extinguishing the candle by which he had dressed himself, he made a little parcel of his decent silver watch and its decent guard, and wrote inside the paper, "Kindly take care of these for me." Apostrophe, he then addressed the parcel to Miss Peacher, and left it on the most protected corner of the little seat in her little porch. It was a cold, hard easterly morning when he latched the garden gate and turned away. The light snowfall which had feathered his schoolroom windows on the Thursday still lingered in the air, and was falling white, while the wind blew black. The tardy day did not appear until he had been on foot 2 hours, and had traversed a greater part of London from east to west. Such breakfast as he had, he took at the comfortless public house, where he had parted from Rider Hood on the occasion of their night walk. He took it, standing at the littered bar, and looked loweringly at a man who stood where Rider Hood had stood that early morning. He outwalked the short day, and was on the towing path by the river, somewhat footsore, when the night closed in. Still 2 or 3 miles short of the lock, he slackened his pace then, but went steadily on. The ground was now covered with snow, though thinly, and there were floating lumps of ice in the more exposed parts of the river, and broken sheets of ice under the shelter of the banks. He took heed of nothing but the ice, the snow, and the distance, until he saw a light ahead, which he knew gleamed from the lockhouse window. It arrested his steps, and he looked all around. The ice, and the snow, and he, and the one light, had absolute possession of the dreary scene. In the distance before him, lay the place where he had struck the worse than useless blows, that mocked him with Lizzie's presence there as Eugene's wife. In the distance behind him, lay the place where the children with pointing arms had seemed to devote him to the demons in crying out his name. Within there, where the light was the man who, as to both distances, could give him up to ruin. To these limits, had his world shrunk. He mended his pace, keeping his eyes upon the light with a strange intensity, as if he were taking aim at it. When he approached it so nearly as that it parted in two rays, they seemed to fasten themselves to him, and draw him on. When he struck the door with his hand, his foot followed so quickly on his hand, that he was in the room, before he was bidden to enter. The light was the joint product of a fire and a candle. Between the two, with his feet on the iron fender, sat Rider Hood, pipe in mouth. He looked up with a surly nod, when his visitor came in. His visitor looked down with a surly nod. His outer clothing removed, the visitor then took a seat on the opposite side of the fire. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.